it's very hard to make decisions, optimal decisions. So now we have the tools, the AI and machine learning tools that help us. And the good news is that I see that now more often as a central part of the decision-making process about sourcing strategy than it ever was before. And that's great because the economics actually do line up. This is kind of the key theme that you talk about so often with your guests. This is no longer a cost of doing business. It's a way to achieve your ESG objectives, your sustainability goals, and to be crass about it, to make money.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery from SAP, and with me on the show today, I have my special guest, Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be with you. Looking forward to this. My name is Jeff Miller. I'm a director in Rockwell Automation's Calypso Digital Business Unit. I'm responsible for our digital performance program inside of manufacturing and supply chain management. I've been at this for a number of decades, a strong supply chain background, and very much looking forward to our call today.
And tell me a little bit more about Calypso, Jeff. What do you guys do?
Sure. Calypso is the digital business unit of Rockwell Automation. Calypso is a longstanding consultancy focused in innovation and supply chain. Rockwell Automation purchased Calypso a couple of years ago, which has been a great transaction for the firm. We have access to the resources and capabilities of Rockwell Automation, one of the leading industrial and process automation companies in the world. And the visions are aligned, and it's really great to have the strength of Rockwell Automation and Calypso together. It also creates a great home for people like us, like you and me, who are supply chain practitioners and are trying to advance the state of the technology in business and driving results. So that's who Calypso is.
And your own personal area of interest?
Well, I've been at this. Like I said, I grew up in capital equipment, large asset manufacturing, and for the last couple decades have been focused at this nexus of IT, OT, and business, specifically around supply chains, trying to figure out ways to make them more efficient, make them more visible, more transparent, more effective. And if there was ever a time for that, I think it's kind of now. So I think we're in something of a renaissance for supply chain management using these technologies we have today. It's an exciting time to be in this.
Yeah. And more efficient. I like to think that efficiency is also synonymous with sustainability because the two things go hand in hand. By making a supply chain more sustainable, you are de facto making it more efficient and vice versa. And well, let me throw that at you. Do you agree? Is that a fair statement, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And in fact, if we look over the last, even most recent, say 5 or 10 years, we've seen this move in supply chain management thinking from it being simply a system for mitigating risk whose value was predicated on cost reduction to a system that can actively be used to achieve goals related to environment, sustainability, recyclability, design for X now, a design for sustainability, design for reusability or recycling. All these things are made possible through the technologies that we have available today. And those are all consistent with what we've always wanted to do with supply chains. It's just that the denominator now isn't just cost, it's environmental impact, it's sustainability. So it fits quite naturally, and it seems like a natural maturation of this body of knowledge that we all are concerned with.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the very first time people became aware of supply chain wasn't necessarily the pandemic. I think before that, people became aware of it with the ascendancy of Tim Cook in Apple because he headed up their supply chain. And well, maybe that's a bit nerdish on my part. Maybe not the wider public was aware of that, but he demonstrated the importance of supply chain in general because the combination of himself and Steve Jobs at the time really brought Apple up and up because they had been floundering. And it was the combination, I think, of the two of them, and then Tim took over. More recently, we've seen supply chain come to the even greater fore with the pandemic. Now we're realizing the importance of sustainability in supply chain, something that is happening in other aspects of business as well. But for supply chain, why do you think it's important that we be more sustainable?
Well, there are societal reasons which are significant drivers. And this is, again, to your point on Tim Cook very briefly. My recollection is he was one of the first to tie supply chain into business, to tie product design. It wasn't just Johnny Ive. It was tying the idea that optimizing a supply chain actually drove a top line result. He made it more of a topic that was outside the realm of the box kickers. He mainstreamed it, I think, more so than anybody else prior to his time. And that goes to the point today. Well, supply chain is one of the key drivers of achieving these goals related to decarbonization, related to reusability, landfill reduction. I remember vividly how my first exposure to supply chain in this context was around waste reduction in a manufacturing setting. So it's sort of come of age. I think you're right. There were some pivotal moments, one of them being Tim Cook in making this something that was more mainstream to the conversation. I think the pandemic also accelerated that. I used to say over the last year or so, if I had a nickel for every time supply chain had been mentioned as a term by the mass media, I could retire, where 5 years ago, nobody knew what a supply chain was. And admittedly, many people today still misunderstand what supply chain management as a discipline is or what supply chains actually are. I think we've really moved it into a point where it is now recognized as a tool with which to not only satisfy demand, but to make a difference in the environment and make a difference with respect to sovereign nation dealings, corporate governance. It's become somewhat political. That's good and bad. But I think it's now a central part of the conversation around how we operate as societies.
Yeah. I often think that the term supply chain is outdated because it's no longer really a chain. A chain implies A to B to C, whereas this is more of a kind of a supply web, I want to think, or a supply ecosystem, although neither of those really roll off the tongue as well either, do they?
No, they don't, but you're so right. We grew up thinking about the supply chain being linear and sequential. Many of us are familiar with that, the supply chain operations reference, the SCORE model, so-called, design, plan, purchase, make, move, sell, and then maybe add service to the end. Well, it was linear and serial, and when we talked about the integrated supply chain, we generally meant bringing all the purchasing people together or bringing all the planners together. We didn't talk about it as a mesh or a web or a network. And now the body of knowledge is there. I think that actually has an important bearing on sustainability as well, because the easy stuff, Tom, I think we've largely done. Route optimization, got it. How to decarbonize or reduce carbon in route optimization for logistics, both inbound and outbound. Plenty of body of knowledge there, plenty of capability, AI tools, and so forth. The more complicated piece is looking at the complete product life cycle and figuring out how to make decisions that span all of those nodes of the supply chain and arrive at the optimal sustainability footprint. It's not as easy as just picking one piece out. And I think that's where the tools from today forward will help us a great deal.
Yeah, and speaking of the tools, I mean, how do you see digital helping us become more sustainable?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today, influence the future.
Well, what digital has done for us, and I guess the best capstone to use here in this example is the digital thread. What it's done for us is it's allowed us to connect pieces of the supply chain more efficiently, whether it's visibility and transit visibility, or it's the sharing of design information across the life cycle and across all the nodes. So now if we have an objective, for example, to improve the recyclability of a product, okay, that's everything from its packaging to the materials that it's manufactured from to the processes themselves. It's now easier. It's not easy. It's easier to make decisions in each of the nodes of that value chain, so-called value chain or value network, that will result in lowest environmental impact or highest sustainability. So I think that's the role that digital plays for us. And this is manifest in your company's software and the solutions that my company and many others produce. We can now answer those questions. How do I reduce the amount of carbon it takes to produce this part? I can answer that question. How much carbon is associated with these material choices I make about what I'm going to manufacture that item out of? What is the environmental impact of it being non-recyclable or recyclable? What is the cost of actually disassembly and recycling? Is it higher or lower than the incremental savings in manufacturing? All these complex questions are now easier to answer, thanks to the digital tools that we have that connect all the data together.
Sure. And where, I mean, supply chains are vast and enormous. Where will people get the most bang for their buck if they want to invest in becoming more sustainable?
Well, there's still a lot of runway left in connectivity, and manufacturing still operates collectively. Kind of, you take a big peanut butter approach. Most manufacturing operates at an overall equipment effectiveness rate of 50 to 60%. And this is a measure of how productively the factory uses its assets, regardless of whether we're talking about capital equipment or consumer electronics, maybe even food and beverage. We talk about operational equipment effectiveness. So I believe manufacturing operations still is a very rich environment in which to look for opportunities to reduce cost and reduce environmental footprint. We had a project recently where we are building a set of AI tools associated with poultry processing to more efficiently use water, potable water, which of course is an enormously highly used resource in most kinds of food processing, but particularly animal processing and particularly poultry processing. So it might seem a small thing, but if the water is a resource that's scarce and should be managed, and so well, we were looking at how can we affect the use of water in poultry processing all the way down through how the poultry are packaged, not just how they're inbound processed. So the supply chain, the ends of the supply chain outside of manufacturing play into this, but I believe that the factory itself is still an area that's ripe for improvement. We're doing work like that with capital goods manufacturers and deciding how to operate the plant to reduce electrical consumption or other process parameters, wages, water, air, gas, electric, process steam. So there's much to do in manufacturing operations, I think, and from there, other parts of the supply chain.
Are you seeing many people looking into circularity yet? Because the use of recycled as opposed to virgin goods is surely, A, should bring down costs, you'd imagine, as well as B, reducing footprint.
Yeah, we do. And it's interesting, you see it kind of across the spectrum. It's well known in the electronics sector. It's well known in the polymer sector, working the polymer wedge. Some challenges there because the reclamation process costs are sometimes high, but certainly we're seeing that in many industries. We see it in capital equipment in terms of recyclability of metals and the costs for virgin material versus recycled material. We're seeing companies that recycle aluminum into cans and other aluminum products, not just consumer products, but they're very busy because the demand for that feed stream of recycled aluminum and recycled steel is very, very high. So yes, we are seeing it. I think it's driven not only by supply chain, Tom, but it's also driven in some cases by just the global economics. If we can operate successful metals reclamation on a more localized basis versus going overseas for it, where now you have the logistics costs of transport and the environmental impact of transport, it kind of makes the case for it. This gets political. Not everybody wants a metals smelter in their country or in their state. But these are things that at least we need the data to be able to make wise decisions. So the answer to your question, in my view, is yes, we do see this. We see design for use of reclaimed material now. We see same as except or interchangeable change in product design to accommodate changes in the raw material that's used, either virgin material with a certain spec or suitable recycled materials with a slightly different set of specifications. But we do see more and more manufacturers doing that.
Cool. And what about doing things like looking down through your supply chain and optimizing amongst your suppliers? I mean, surely that's important as well, when supply chain itself is responsible for, depending on the industry, anywhere from 50 to 60 to over 90% of your emissions.
Exactly. And again, back to the idea of what digital is doing, it's helping us make a more comprehensive decision. Now we can look at total cost, net landed cost, the environmental impacts. We can compare localization and some of its cost drivers to importation with its cost drivers. What used to be so unidimensional, you and I kind of grew up in this space, low-cost country sourcing. Everybody was pursuing labor arbitrage. That was the order of the day in sourcing and procurement. And these other factors that about which we can gather data now, thanks to these tools, now those are part and parcel of the decision-making about where to source and the value of aggregating demand in one location and optimizing that chain from an environmental standpoint, from an emission standpoint, versus diversifying, which might have a negative environmental impact, but might make my factory operate better. So many of our decisions now involve data that on their faces will operate in tension with one another. It's very hard to make decisions, optimal decisions. So now we have the tools, the AI and machine learning tools that help us. And the good news is that I see that now more often as a central part of the decision-making process about sourcing strategy than it ever was before. And that's great because the economics actually do line up. This is kind of the key theme that you talk about so often with your guests. This is no longer a cost of doing business. It's a way to achieve your ESG objectives, your sustainability goals, and to be crass about it, to make money. So it's good to see this where we are now.
Well, that's a win-win, isn't it? It's, you know, doing good for society and also doing good for your organization. I mean, that's sustainability as well, because you need your company to survive. And the only way to do that is to be sustainable. You know, it has to be economically sustainable for your company to do these things as well, or it's not going to happen.
And we're there now. This is, again, back to kind of the theme of the day around the role of digital and the role of these sophisticated tools. They help make that possible. But you're right. I think societies around the world, we all kind of operate the same way. If you can't sustain your business, then it's hard to commit to sustaining the environment. And I know that that might sound coarse to the ear, but that's the reality. The good news is that the tools, the technologies, the material science, the manufacturing, the availability of energy at different forms at different times, all these now are coming together and converging through these solutions that we help our clients deploy to truly achieve those goals. They are no longer mutually exclusive. Yeah. They used to be perhaps or were perceived as such, but they really aren't.
And can you give us some examples, Jeff, of uses of the likes of, I mean, you mentioned AI and digital thread and things like that, but can you give us some actual use cases of wins that you've had?
Back to the factory, because I think this, again, continues to be, there's very little low-hanging fruit, but if there is any at all, it may be a first in manufacturing. So we've got several clients now across the spectrum, heavy goods, capital equipment, some consumer white goods, so-called white goods, all of whom are being asked the question or asking themselves, how much carbon does it take to make this part? How much carbon am I consuming to assemble this in this manner? So we've got several programs underway with different clients, some of which use emulation and simulation technology, where we're simulating factories, entire production lines, some more focused on operations to collect data and correlate it. But we're building tools that allow them to answer the question, how much carbon am I consuming or creating, rather, I should say, how much carbon am I creating by manufacturing in this way? And then the rejoinder question, and what if I change what I'm doing? And that's been the question that's been very difficult to answer. What if, for example, during changeovers on a major machining center, a metals milling machine, what if I put the machine into a different form of standby and shut the spindles down, thereby reducing the electrical usage? How much is that worth? We had a situation with a client recently where their perception, without data, their perception was, that won't make much of a difference. Well, what they didn't realize was how often they were changing over and how many minutes were spent with spindles spinning on these large 440-volt motored machines. And anyway, it ended up being, 18 to 20 hours a week of wasted machine spindle time. Now, I don't have the correlation to how many pounds of carbon dioxide were produced to make the electricity. By the way, this is in a factory that co-generates. So they're operating diesel generators of all things. Yes, believe it or not. So I mean, my point is simply that by giving them data to show that by changing the manner which they handle changeovers, they could materially reduce the amount of electricity they consume, thereby making a significant contribution to decarbonizing that part of the plant. And you know what, Tom? It didn't cost them, quote unquote, anything in terms of the throughput of the factory. They could still produce the same amount of goods. Mm-hmm. So that's one example, and it's a heavy manufacturing example. There are others like that that have focused on reducing energy consumption to manufacture everything from pharmaceuticals to heavy machined goods. And it's because we have tools that allow the factory to see their operations, not just electricity, but process steam and other things in ways that they previously had not been able to.
That's cool, Jeff. Most organizations now have a broader ESG stated aim or goals that investors are looking into and holding firms more accountable for. How can we in supply chain, as supply chain professionals, help organizations meet those stated aims?
This is where supply chain broadens out. And again, you and I, as students of this for so many years and being practitioners, now I see connections into other parts of commerce and governance, sovereign governance, as well as corporate governance. And supply chain has roles there. For example, there was an article, I don't know that it was today, but maybe a couple of days ago, in the Wall Street Journal related to semiconductor manufacturing. I did not realize that, for example, Taiwan Semiconductor holds about 92% of the world's manufacturing of a certain category of application-specific ICs, not commodity ones. And the point was that there's a deep concentration, and we've known this through the pandemic. We've seen concentrations of manufacturing and concentrations of availability of product in certain areas. Now, part of ESG, societal and governance, is to look at where you're getting your materials and to make appropriate judgments on whether you should be and want to be getting your materials from those locations. And so then the conversations come up around alternative sources of supply and the total costs of alternative sources of supply. Supply chain is in the middle of those kinds of decisions, whether it's for supply chain continuity. Remember the Suez Canal blockage, for example, alternative routes of supply, or concentration because of geopolitical concerns, national security, national sovereignty concerns. Supply chains are in the middle of that now, where they perhaps were not, say, 20 years ago or 10 years ago. So again, the combination of the tools we have to make better decisions. Your guest a couple of days ago on the podcast was on this subject, as many of your other guests have been, around planning, AI-supported planning, AI-supported and enabled logistics. I do think that we as practitioners, even though we're loath to touch that third rail, politics and so forth, it is part of the ESG agenda, at least in the S and the G components of it. So yes, I do think we have a responsibility as practitioners to take the data and the tools that we have and support these other aspects of decision-making around corporate governance, about where we get our materials and where we manufacture. Again, it used to be so simple. It was unidimensional, labor arbitrage, and then it became labor arbitrage and environmental, not in a good way. And now it's much broader, and the tools, I think, enable us to help support the decision-making.
Cool. Jeff, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there any question I haven't asked that you wish I had, or any aspect of this we've not touched on that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
No, Tom, I really not, but I would leave our listeners with a thought. And I get this so often from your podcasts. It's one of optimism. I think this is the coolest time to be a supply chain practitioner and a supply chain professional, because what we do day in and day out has the capability to change the environment. I know that sounds cliche, or change the world. It really does, though. And perhaps more so than some other disciplines and professional endeavors in the industrial sphere, supply chain is really, really important to us now. And the thought that animates my actions most days is this: I've got the tools. We've laid the foundation. We may not have known we were doing it technologically and operationally, but we have powerful tools thanks to digital and the way we now view the supply chain, as you said earlier, as a mesh. We're able to do things that we couldn't do years ago. They were either cost prohibitive or the technologies didn't exist. So I'm genuinely excited about our ability to make step changes in sustainability, reductions in environmental impact, stability of supply chains with these tools going forward. It's just going to accelerate. I wish there was a Moore's Law corollary to this for what we do in supply chain, but I think it's an exciting time, and I appreciate the chance to say that on your podcast, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Jeff. Okay, Jeff, if people want to know more about yourself or about Calypso or Rockwell or sustainability or any of the things we discussed in the podcast today, where would you have me direct them?
Well, the best place to go on sustainability is to calypso.com. We have a very vibrant sustainability ESG business, more focused really on sustainability as an industrial consultancy, where we're producing these solutions using some of the most advanced technologies that are out there. Rockwell Automation owns many of these technologies around emulation and simulation because it's an automation company. So between rockwellautomation.com and specifically around environmental, calypso.com, and of course you can find me there as well through the Calypso website, we'd be happy to talk more and share ideas and contribute to the body of knowledge.
Fantastic. Jeff, that's been really interesting. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks so much, Tom. It's great to be with you.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain, or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.